Welcome to Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
Welcome to a new episode of Care in Action, the podcast from Care Austria, where we chat with inspiring voices about global challenges and solutions. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Jules Lynch, the founder and CEO of the Global Girl Project. With over 25 years as a community social worker and therapist in Canada, the UK, the US, and countries in the so-called Global South like Tanzania and Jamaica, Jules knows firsthand the power of empowerment. Growing up as a woman of color in a small, predominantly white town, she experienced the need for visible role models and representation. In 2014, she founded the Global Girl Project, a feminist organization that mobilizes marginalized girls from the majority world, the Global South, to become agents of social change. And this is exactly the intersection with the work of CARE. CARE is globally empowering women and girls. So this podcast is really special to me. It's a big honor to have you in this program, Jules. Welcome again. And let us jump right into our conversation. So maybe you can tell us a little bit more about your background and how you were influenced and what shaped your vision of becoming a feminist.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you. The beautiful introduction. It's always slightly uncomfortable to hear people talking about you in that way. But it's great, you know, and obviously there's a lot of connections between our work. So I'm happy to be here. You know, a little bit more about myself. How do I describe myself today? I'm Canadian, which is important to say in this time, I think. Indian. I grew up in a
we don't know what you are talking about with this. I have to say,
people always assume I'm American, and I'm here to make it clear that I am Canadian, and that
point made.
You know, there you go. All of the differences in all of the places, I think it matters. Personally, as a community worker and a development worker, and I grew up in a very small town in southern Ontario, Canada, in the suburbs. My mom is white and British, and my father was Jamaican. I always grew up, my mom worked within charities, so she worked within the Red Cross and the United Way, from an admin side. And so I was always kind of part of that charity world, but actually wanted to be a doctor. And so I was like, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to med school. I'm going to be a doctor. I want to be a pediatrician. And kind of through a series of different occurrences, or depending on what you believe, I was sort of led down a different path and into charity work, into community work, eventually where I am today. But obviously that's the long journey. Where did I start in terms of my journey towards being a feminist? That's a big question, isn't it? Where did it start? I mean, if I'm honest, I think where it started was really, I had my father, who I said was Jamaican, was a very stereotypical Jamaican man, who was born in the 40s and had very specific ideas around what it meant to be a girl. And I already wasn't that type of girl anyways, and I always was somebody who questioned why I needed to do certain things. I had a younger brother, and I always wanted to have those same freedoms that he was given, and he was my younger brother, and he was a pain in my backside. And I was like, how come he has all these freedom, he can do what he wants, and I can't? That doesn't make sense. And so I think from a very young age, that's probably where it started, this idea of equity and being able to have the same opportunities. And I think that, that's where it began. And obviously it's much deeper than that at this point, but that's where I'll leave it.
Yeah, because I'm asking that so directly, because when I flipped through the Global Girl Project website, which I highly would recommend to our appreciated listeners of this podcast, the first that came to my mind that I saw that you are female led. You focus on girls globally, majority in the so-called Global South, and that you call yourself, it's nice how it is explained on your website, focusing on girls. Of course, we are a feminist organization, but we are very aware that in different contexts, this is perceived in different ways. Mm-hmm. And then you describe very clearly the pillars of your convictions that are the basis for your work, because inside CARE, we have an ongoing discussion for years, because I'm in this role as CARE Austria for 16 years now. And so you see, I enjoy very much what I'm doing, obviously.
Yes, that's great.
And I always was very much in this discussion, whether we are a feminist organization or not. I would say we are not a feminist organization, but of course, many leaders of CARE I'm also considering myself as a feminist, but this is not nothing that I would start talking about publicly in a conservative country like Austria. Yeah, because what we see here, and that leads me to my next question, in Central Europe, at least, and as far as I know, also in other European countries, we see a certain backlash on feminism, not only, and we don't get too political here, not only from the right side, but also from young girls and from our daughters, if you want, who say, yeah, it's super that you fought your whole life and that you did everything, but I don't want to have it. And this new buzzword of the traditional housewives, you know, this phenomena, there are whole documentaries coming out of that. Yeah. So we see a backlash from our next generation, which worries me a bit, to be very honest. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jules?
Oh, I mean, I think that the first challenge is right is you know that we still see calling ourselves a feminist as a dirty word, you know. And at Global Girl, we've had many conversations around, you know, do we describe ourselves in this way, especially considering the places that we work. You know, we work in some of the sort of the most marginalized communities globally. And you know, my freedom as somebody who identifies as a woman is far different from the freedom that most of the girls we work with have. And so we've had many discussions around that. And it's almost like it's like a reclaiming of the word, right? Yeah. it's dirty because of the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. That's why it's dirty. It's not dirty because it's dirty. It's dirty because of the patriarchy. And
you're right.
It's old that it is a dirty word, and that we shouldn't shout about it. And that's exactly what women, you know, and non-binary folk have been told our entire lives and for generations prior, is like, don't shout about it. Don't be too proud. You know, and so we made a decision to put that at the forefront. This is who we are. We are reclaiming the word. We are not ashamed of it. And we did a lot of research with our partners who are based in places like, you know, Haiti and India and Uganda. And we had conversations with them around the word, you know, feminist. And is this something that they call themselves? And what we got back from our partners was yes. Yes, they do. And so I almost think that there's a generation, there's different generations here. So we have generations, you know, like our children, although my child is a bit younger, so we'll see where she ends up landing, you know, where our children who are in their early 20s they've grown up with that privilege. Mm-hmm. They don't know.
Without any fights.
Yeah, without any fight. Yeah. They have absolutely true. No idea, right? When I was a child, my mom was still, you know, she didn't start working until I was a bit older. You know, so she was still of that. She's like a baby boomer. So she was still of that generation where as women, you started work, but probably not until maybe you've had a family. you know, I'm Gen X. It was the first generation that kind of had to do both. We were like, go to university, get the job, have the children, do all of the things, because your partner, if you have a male partner, isn't going to do it. And so, you know, we are of that generation where we kind of had to fight all of the things. And so the backlash of privilege is that you don't know that you have privilege. And so,
yeah, that's true.
You know, it is okay. I think it's okay for that, for the those, you know, people in early 20s to kind of go back and say, actually, we're kind of interested in this other offering that as feminists we've said, you know, doesn't express equity. But I trust that they'll go back and they'll do it in a different way.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm. So they want to go back and be housewives, but then it will come from a different place. It will come from a place of choice and voice, which is completely different from where it came from before, where it was like, this is the only option I have, right? And so I think, you know, it's not about judging sort of that you need to do this, you need to do that, but it's, have you made a choice? Is this a conscious choice you're making? And do you have a choice to make something else? Mm-hmm. Now, if I look at that same generation of people in the early 20s in the places that we're working, they're very much still, for the most part, in that place of claiming that word feminist. Mm-hmm. Because they haven't, their parents didn't grow up with that privilege, mm-hmm. right? So we're working in parts of the world where, you know, early marriage is something that still is prevalent.
Almost.
Mm-hmm. You know, that a lot of the girls that we're working with, that the main focus for them is going to be around being a mother and a wife, that many of them are still not able to complete school. So there's a different fight. So they are still fighting to be feminist, mm-hmm. and to be seen as equal. And so it's just a different place. And I don't think that here in Europe that we're going backwards. I don't believe that there's a going backwards, but I think there's a revisiting. And I think we have to keep revisiting to go forward.
This is put nicely. And as you said it so rightly, it might also be a significant, sign of wealth that we have those choices, right? Because also in the places we work, in the same places like you as Care, globally focused, I say the so-called global south, because I did not choose to be born in the global north, and I don't like this categorization of who is what, because we work in this global setting and I believe in global collaboration. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to be quite wealthy as a society in Emirates to reach the level to have the discussion, as you put it, so that we are revisiting a past that never was that shiny like it is presented to us today on social media, and that many young women outside Europe cling to the to be a feminist, they cling to this terminus because it helps them in their personal empowerment. I would say it is a key ingredient, because what feminists are asking for is not so, should be something normal.
Yeah, nowadays. We're just asking for
normal things with human rights.
Yes, to make a choice and to have a voice. And that is it. And I think, so that means, great, many of the girls that we know who are, we call, for us, a global girl, we call the global south the global majority, because it is actually the majority, and we call the global north the global minority. So you and I live in the global minority.
Okay.
You know, a shifting of that idea of power. We're actually in the global minority. You know, and the girls that are girls and young women who are growing up in the global minority right now are growing up with a huge amount of privilege, and that doesn't mean that there is an extreme amount of poverty and marginalization, but still in the context of the fight that we've had towards gender equity, we are in a different place. And so it's important to revisit.
Mm-hmm.
We absolutely have to. And so I'm not that worried about it, but I think that it does age you. I just turned 51 on Friday, and I'm like, it ages you, and you're like, in here, I'm a feminist, right? Because I'm like, oh my God.
So I'm even some years older than you, and I'm also a feminist. But I would say that feminism today should be really included in a human rights debate.
Yeah.
And we should not be forced to declare ourselves as this and that, because we need equal access, equal rights, and we need power sharing, and we need that globally, not only in the global minority or majority, as you call it. And I like this expression. It goes better with me than this global north and global south, because this is really a bit difficult. And we have also some countries that we work with in Eastern Europe. And they always ask, so what are we now?
Where are we?
Yeah. Where are we? Yeah. Or is Australia the global south? Of course not in this discussion. So this, I'm not a big fan of that, to be honest. So we have touched it already, but maybe you can frame it. It's obvious for me somehow, but maybe not for all of our listeners. Why do you focus on girls of the global majority? Because we have lots to do also in our own countries, but like CARE, you are also focusing on girls from global south, global majority.
Mm-hmm.
When did you decide that, and why?
I mean, you know, for many years I worked in Canada, and I worked in the United States. I lived in the United States for 9 years, and I worked, you know, in very poor parts of Los Angeles. I've worked in the UK for many years. So, you know, I've absolutely worked in the different places that I have lived and that I may have more experience in. And so, you know, I'm somebody who's always looking for a way to do better and be better. And I'm always looking for a way to do things that make me uncomfortable and things that are very difficult. And that's just who I am. And that's who I've always been. And so, you know, I know that there's many people doing work here in the global minority with girls and young women. I was one of those people, and I think that is wonderful. But I saw a gap. And you know, I saw a significant gap working specifically with girls. We aren't just working with girls in the global majority. We're working with very marginalized girls in the global majority.
Uh-huh.
And so we're working with girls who are living in very difficult situations and poverty-stricken communities within the global majority as well. So we're even more specific, right? So we're not working with middle or upper class girls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very, very poor rural girls. So what I decided from the beginning is that will be our focus, because what happens is if you start to let creep in work with populations that may be a bit easier to access or a bit more straightforward to work with, your energy can start going that way because it's easier. It's easier to get funding it's easier to kind of find ways to do the work because they have more privilege, have more access. And so I wanted to make sure that we stayed focused on what was most challenging so that we could really use all of our energy to find ways to do that work, you know. And the more we did the work and the more we formed partnerships with different organizations, it was just clear and clear that there was a huge gap, you know. And I've spoken about this in other places, that what I saw happening is that there's tons of work that we do with marginalized girls in the global majority around survival. Mm-hmm. So around sexual reproductive health, mm-hmm. right? Around period poverty, around, you know, early marriage, around all of these things that are really important subjects, but they're around survival.
Mm-hmm.
What I saw much less of on an international scale was work around thriving and growth and mm-hmm. power and leadership. You know, that's wonderful if we make sure that girls have access to education.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important that girls understand how to protect themselves, you know, sexually and in relationship. What is equally important is to connect the girls with their power and their voice as girls and teach them how to use that to create change. And I just saw a gap. And a lot of our partners are like, yes, we do all of this other work, but we don't do this piece. Mm-hmm. We certainly don't do it internationally. We don't connect girls around the world. And so, you know, that's why we've continued to focus on it specifically, because it then allows us to kind of match it with the work that is already happening already around things that are also equally important, but are much more big. Of the day-to-day survival of the girls that we're working with.
So to connect more loose ties together, is that correct? And also I would say that you have been talking now about meaningful participation for women and girls, right? Because it's not enough to put more women or girls on a certain table. They have to be able to meaningfully raise their voice, right? And this is the missing link that we want to highlight here, both of us in our positions, because this is also something that we experience in our work in care, that in some ways we often identify a missing link to the next step forward, or for those who have potential, because also care is not working with middle class or a bit of girls and women and girls. So we focus on the most marginalized, poorest ones, if you want to explain it non-scientifically. Yeah. And then we also see in our work many missing links, especially for those who are really talented, who are really thriving, and who would be more than ready to get to the so-called next level. And what is the next level? Because what we all are facing, I assume also your organization is fighting with that, is the funding in general. And funding is much easier available, understandably, for more the basic needs, the survival needs. But then to build the governance piece, the human rights-based piece, all these, the feministic piece, if you want, the meaningful piece, this is much more difficult, not only to get funding for, but also to implement it in a sustainable and visible, tangible way, isn't it?
100%, absolutely. I got shivers, not just because it's cold here in the UK, but you know, this is exactly sort of the fight that we're fighting now.
Yeah.
Is that we you know, and I'll say something controversial. Well, I don't think it's controversial, but some people will in a moment. But like, you know, we are more comfortable in funding survival, right?
Yeah.
From my perspective, you know, as a Black queer woman working in the places that we're working, is that the powers that be, and we know who the powers that be are, have a vested interest or don't have a vested interest in mobilizing the most marginalized globally. Because the most marginalized globally are what the wealth of that minority are based on. You know, to have an enormous amount of power and wealth in a patriarchal society, you have to have it over somebody.
Mm.
Right. In a matriarchal society, you know, as a feminist, I think we believe that power can be shared and that you don't have to have power over, you know, but I think in a patriarchal society, which is what we live in globally, is that you have to have power over to be powerful, to have money. There has to be people without money. And to have voice, there has to be people without voice. And, you know, we're in the business of trying to mobilize those without voice or money or perceived power. However, those with power and money have something, they think they have something to lose if that happens, right? That they lose power, that they lose wealth if we have people who they, you know, used to kind of depend on to have that wealth, now become mobilized.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a much bigger system, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cog that has been working for hundreds of years, right? That the wealth of some is built on the poverty of others, and we're in the business of trying to mobilize those without power. And it's really difficult to convince people that this mm-hmm. is where we need to mm-hmm. fund, and that it's not just about making sure that a girl can access sexual reproductive health or that mm-hmm. she can access school.
Yeah.
You know, it's much more than that. And so it is, you know, it's really, it, this is why we do the work, but it is so difficult, as you know.
I mean, and what you framed now for all of us is something that we experience on a global level, right?
Yeah.
But we also see it on national levels, because we are living in countries and we are working in countries. And in many countries that CARE is working, I would say, and I don't want to be offensive, but what you described there applies very well to Brazil, many places in the world, yeah, to Thailand, you yeah. name it. So it's not only the evil global approach. This is also, you can break it down easily to a national level. And I would say it is very important for, if we look at Afghanistan now, of course it is important to talk about survival possibilities for women. I mean, they were not rescued in the last earthquake because it's forbidden to touch a woman and then you have to die in the grave. I mean, this is not imaginable, simply.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we talk at the example of Afghanistan, that the children are deprived from going to school because they are female. I mean, this is, it sounds so basic, but in this setting, this is the first step for everything that can follow. So my question, the basics have to be in place that the rest can be built up, isn't it? Because it's very hard from my experience. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's very hard if you don't have no access to any formal education, to nothing. You can achieve some things, but it's much, much harder if the basics are not in place, isn't it? What is your take on that?
I mean, yes, much harder. And I, first of all, to say I am not, you know, it is not my direct lived experience, right? It is the lived experience of the girls with whom we work. And so that's important to say. What I can see from the girls with whom we work is that, yes, it is much, 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 much harder, but it is possible to work on both together.
Yeah.
And I think that's where globally we're globally and in terms of development, we're missing the mark there, and that we're like, okay, we have to have the sort of those basics first, and then we start to look at what sometimes we call soft skills. And mm-hmm. they're core yeah. skills. They're not soft skills. They're core skills.
Yeah.
That have to go alongside. We're working in Uganda with, you know, Soccer Without Borders, with girls who are, you know, who are coming from war-torn countries, who are asylum seekers, who are very much out of school. Mm-hmm. And they are doing our program, and they are blowing us out of the water. They're doing amazing work, and they are not in school and they don't have access to education at this point, mm-hmm. You know, because they are undocumented. And so there is real impact. You know, we work in Haiti right now where because of the political situation, you know, schools have ended up being closed. They don't have personal safety. You know, the three are very dangerous places right now.
Can't go anywhere.
They can't go anywhere, and they still have our program. And for many of the girls I'm working with, like this is the one thing that is pushing them forward, because our programming is around the idea of your own power and voice. Mm-hmm. And
is it leadership training, would you say?
Yeah, it's leadership training. It's teaching girls how to lead, but it's teaching girls how to lead from the place that they are. We're not teaching them that they can be leaders in 2 to 5 years. We're teaching them that they are leaders now. They mm-hmm. just don't know it, right? And the way that you lead is by connecting to your voice, knowing what your voice sounds like, and then knowing what you want to say and how to say it, and how to mobilize your community with you, right? Mm-hmm. How do you, it's not just about what happens with you, but what happens within your community. And that's really in a place where, you know, there isn't personal safety, in a place where there isn't access to education. There isn't access to clean water.
No safety net.
No safety net. The one thing that many of our girls have is something that you cannot take away.
Mm-hmm.
Once they know that they have a voice and then they use it, you mm-hmm. can't take that away. You can't change that. That is always in her. And so hopefully as things change in the places that we work, and things will change, everything changes.
Yeah.
They will always have that. And maybe they will be able to go back to school. Maybe they will be able to get their own job. And so I think this is an important piece that even without these other pieces is you can make use of. And that's not to say that all these other pieces need to be in place like that.
Yeah.
And that work is being done. It's just not the work that Global Girl does.
Yeah.
Our work goes so well alongside what our partners are doing and what government organizations do, because you have to, I feel intrinsically you need to have both.
Yeah, we have to put it together better, right? And we have to be very realistic that as important as it is to have the basics in place, it is totally unrealistic in many places. You quoted two of them. In the preparation for today, I read that you worked also in the favelas of Rio de Janeiro. I studied in Brazil 35 years ago, mm-hmm. and it did not change a lot for those marginalized people. It changed a lot there. I'm not saying that it didn't change a lot in Brazil,
yeah.
but those marginalized 40 years ago, the favelas are even worse than 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And these people are very exploited, working in super rich households. And the whole system, as you said so rightly in the beginning, is only working because you have so many underprivileged that are serving the rest, that
yeah.
this is part of the system. So many rich people all over the place don't have very much high interest to really do systemic change, because then also their comfortable life would look a bit different. It would not be ugly yeah. or unhappy, but they also would have to change. And it's interesting, this conversation, because I think that we are interesting to live now, because more change than now never happened before in the last 50, 60 years. We had some milestones, but now everything is in question. Everything is up and down. Yeah.
Yeah.
And on top of all that, we see this, I want to hear your opinion on it.
Mm-hmm.
We see this artificial intelligence now penetrating all our lives, all levels, if you want it or not.
Yeah.
And we see that also in rich, so-called rich societies,
mm-hmm.
Education has to be redefined.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we now talk about the marginalized people in the southern, how do you call it, the majority world, the global south, yeah? And we said so rightly that formal education access in many places simply is not there, and especially for girls.
Yes.
We always quote Afghanistan, but you're totally right. Haiti, Nepal, you name it. When you're a girl in a remote area, you are not going to school because it's too dangerous. You have to work at home. You have to work in the field and all that.
Yeah.
So now with the new powerful tools, mm-hmm. also highly trained people everywhere in the world mm-hmm. have to rethink their career, their work, everything. So what can we do as organizations, as institutions mm-hmm. to enable also the super non-privileged in the majority world mm-hmm. to make use of what is coming here now to all of our lives?
Mm-hmm.
And many people now talk about the digital gap being the new one that will divide the world in a different way. So isn't that an additional layer of complexity that we have to deal with?
Oh my goodness, that is a big question on there. I mean, and I'm speaking as somebody who's very inept when it comes to AI and anything digital. I was kind of, you know, I grew up without, you know, we didn't have computers or anything like that, right? And so we like learned it in late 20s, and I'm somebody who my team will tell you is horrible at anything to do with technology. So I have kind of pushed AI away as much as I have been able to. Obviously, it's not possible, but even sort of ChatGPT, I'm like, I don't even know how to use this thing. But we work in parts of the world where most of the girls that we work with are not connected to the online world, right? Most of them don't have any sort of access, either data-wise or in terms of devices. If there are devices in the family, those belong to brothers and fathers and not to girls or women.
But isn't that in itself adding difficult situation for females if they are not part of this discussion?
Yes, absolutely. It's another way to isolate, right?
Yeah.
Like I think the thing that I have, you know, I can see clearly is that the best way to control people is to isolate them, right? And women and girls globally in many parts of the world are very isolated. And another way that they are now isolated is the lack of access to technology. You know, at Global Girl Project, it's one of our big challenges because I am determined to create a network of connected girls throughout the global majority who are working together to create local and global change. That is sort of the bigger picture. And our constant question every day is, how do we connect girls who are not connected? How do we connect girls who are completely isolated? And we don't have the answers yet. We are trying a lot of different things. But I think one of the things that I'm hopeful of is that because technology is moving so quickly, so many things are changing, that there are people and organizations that are working to find ways to use that technology to connect those who are not connected. You know, and that things are starting to shift in that way where girls are able to talk to each other who, you know, don't have data and don't have devices. But it does provide another divide. It is another separation. And so it's another reason why Global Girl only works with this population, because if you start to look at some of the other international organizations doing leadership work, it's offered online, right? So the girls have to get on the computer. They have to know, even if they can get on, they then have to know how to use it, right? They have to have an email address. Most of our girls don't have email addresses. You know, we get girls an email address, and I've heard girls say, like, why do we need an email address? We don't understand why. Like, how many email addresses do you have?
That's the point with access to information and education. That as much as I know these programs because we have them at the CARE, but we also have this discussion, and I'm a bit fighting for that, to be very honest, that we also don't shy away from the discussion that we have to get women and girls more connected if we want them to be empowered, because also the pure self-empowerment without anything else gets very quickly to its limits.
Yeah.
And I think that it is also for us as institutions, we don't find solutions for everything. This is not our task, but we can offer some pilot, some example, what could work and what could not work. And if we talk here about digitalization, don't get us wrong, dear listeners. Of course, not every woman will be a tech entrepreneur in the next 20 years. This will also not happen in Europe. But there are simple things included in digitalization, like digital talking books. Have you heard about them? This is for people who are illiterate and they get some information courses without needing connectivity, but they can listen to them whenever they want. This is, for example, something that CARE is doing. But if you have listened to all your courses in the talking book and you are very interested girl, what do you do then? That's my next question.
Yeah.
Because we should not underestimate the fact that the majority world, and this was my impression when I was, this really influenced me totally when I was a young student in Brazil 40 years ago, when I saw the millions of people living in favelas, which is nothing romantic. I always thought how many people, talented people, we simply lose just because they are born into a favela. You don't have any chance. And now we can spread this thought to a global level, we lose millions or billions of talented people that we would desperately need to really make good changes. And my question is, how can the Global Girl Project and CARE work to make some of them at least to empower them to really become part of this global game? Because this should be what we are aiming for, isn't it? It's not only about survival or feeling strong and not being strong in the end.
I mean, this is why I call it the Global Girl Project, right? Is that it is for us, it's not just about what's happening locally. Although that is the sort of the seed. It's really about what can we make happen globally. And I think for us, you know, we're a super small organization. You know, we can't solve the sort of the digital divide is a whole enormous barrier that needs to be addressed. In the meantime, what we are trying to do, or not what we're trying to do, what we are doing, and I think this is the important piece, is to plant the seed that there is a whole big world going on out there full of people like you, right? And this is when I'm talking to the girls. There's many, many girls around the world in very similar situations as you who also want to do something about it. And we are going to find a way to connect you. We're going to find a way for you to, even if it's a connection that happens once a month, we are going to find a way to bring you together. Because if, again, like this idea of voice, right? Once you know, you can't unknow. So many of the girls that we're working with, they don't know because they don't have, they're not online, they're not on TV, they don't have phones, they don't know what is happening. And I think that for me, Global Girl, and that, you know, the size that we are, is that's the beginning of it. It's like, actually, this is what's happening in other parts of the world. Here's other girls. You can talk to them, right? We're gonna work with you to co-conspire. You know, and as you become women, and I can't control what happens when they're 25, 30, 35, 40, but as you become women, you know, and you end up getting a job and you have access to a phone and to data, then using that knowledge and that experience that there is a big world out there, that there are other people like you who feel the same way and have the same experience and who want to do something about it. I think that is a huge piece that we can do now. Yeah. And so, you know, we are using what we have, right? We're using our partners. You know, a huge part of our work is our partners. And so we depend on our partners. You know, we have live events every month, every couple of months. And we ask our partners to bring all the graduates together who've done our initial Global Girl Leadership Initiative, bring them to your center. Let's get online. And let's have the girls all talking to each other. Now it's way harder, right? Yeah. That's harder than saying, like, please, you know, they can all do a Zoom link or get on WhatsApp. They can't do that. Yeah. So that's the beginning. But that's an enormous thing for a girl who is sitting, you know, by herself in rural Peru. And a girl who's sitting by herself in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. And a girl who's sitting by herself, you know, in India and Jordan and Iraq, to come together and
to break that isolation.
Break the isolation. And so that I think that can't be underestimated. I think that there are people who live in the most horrible, horrible circumstances that we can't even imagine. Yeah. But the knowing that there's something else out there that exists, that there's another possibility, what can push people through to the other side and can push them to drive them to go for something else when the opportunity arises. And so I think that is the beginning of it. And I wish I had bigger answers, but it's not simple. Like, we can't just give all the girls home. That's not going to change anything. It's going to put them at risk, if anything. Yeah.
That's true.
So,
and it's not about simple answers, but it is important to start the conversation at all levels, because I see it here and there that this is not high on the agenda in the so-called development arena, which I think is a pity, because if we want to stay relevant also in the next 20, 30 years, then we have to offer different things than we did in the past. I really admire what you are doing with the Global Girl Project. I really enjoyed our conversation. It is one of the enormous privileges that at least I have, that I can have this conversation with super engaged, super intelligent women around the world. Jules, thank you. Thank you for being our guest. You provided really interesting insights, and you plant so many seeds for girls around the globe, and Care is doing that as well. So I hope that many, many women and girls can really make use of their dreams, of their capacities, and really do what they are able to do in their context. But it's also not forbidden to strive for a little bit more. And I think we should encourage that if possible.
Yeah,
and absolutely. All our listeners, don't only listen, get engaged with the organization that you trust.
Yes, please
do. You can do something. We can do everything, but we can do something significant for many millions of women, girls, and people in need. And yeah, let's be aware that we are privileged. We are connected. We stay connected. And thank you, Jules. Maybe we can work together more in the future.
Yeah, absolutely, Andrea. I think, you know, thank you obviously for having me on and sort of providing this platform to share about the work that we're doing, which is obviously, you know, what we have in common. And, you know, as a small charity, you know, small feminist charity, and I'll say it again, you know, this is about sort of the sharing of knowledge and the sharing of power, the sharing of passion for the work. And yes, I think to everybody, you know, I always say, like, if the girls that we work with can get up and can come together and put something together and teach others something, right, and get involved, then we have no excuse. Do you know what I mean? We have no excuse. And so please find a way to, you know, I know there's so much happening in the world right now, but there's always going to be a lot happening in the world. And we can either be a part of it or we can sit on the sidelines. And so hopefully people choose to be a part in the way that you can bring, you know, your own passion and skills. So,
At least our listeners, they are not just sitting on the sideline. They are listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
I hope that you liked our conversation. If you did so, please don't forget to give us a like or recommend us. Stay tuned. I see and talk to you next week again. Thanks, Jules.
Thank you.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This was Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For more information about Care and our projects, visit care.at. There you'll also find out how you can support our work. This podcast is made possible with the generous support of CC Real. Thank you for your commitment, which enables this series of conversations. See you next time.